Okay, so then to start Vayikra. So, right, so I put here Rabbi Liebtag's introduction, where at just the beginning he summarizes what I think emerges pretty clearly as soon as you start the Sefer, which is up until Sefer Vayikra, Chumash had essentially been narrative. Right, this is our first introduction to a extended legal section, with the exception of Mishpatim, which was a highly concentrated group of laws in the middle of the Revelation story. We've had stories until now. We really haven't had many mitzvot. And Vayikra isn't like that. Vayikra is the exact opposite. Vayikra is almost all law with a few narratives thrown in. Right? So Vayikra is radically different as it not only begins with a set of commandments, right? The entire book, with the exception of two short narratives, is a collection of various mitzvot. In other words, and we already noted this last week, the ongoing narrative of Chumash that began in Sefer Bereshit and continued with Sefer Shemot does not continue in Sefer Vayikra. Instead, that narrative resumes in Sefer Bamidbar, with the story of how Bnei Israel prepared to leave Har Sinai after the Mishkan had been built. And we discussed this last week, that Shemot seems to end on a cliffhanger. It says that when the Jews would see that the cloud would lift from the Ol Moed, so then they would travel. And then it doesn't tell you when they travel until Bamidbar. So the narrative component of the Torah really just picks up in Sefer Bamidbar. Sefer Vayikra appears to stand alone as it constitutes a book of laws, spanning a wide range of laws, mostly relating to the Mishkan and Kedusha. So with that in mind, though, the question that we really have to deal with the Sefer Vayikra is to figure out, okay, well, what exactly is the point, right? What is Sefer Vayikra trying to accomplish? Right? What is the goal of this highly concentrated group of laws in the middle of the story? Because, you know, as we noted, it's not like Vayikra gets to be an addendum at the end, right? If we take the narrative of the Torah, it's Bereshit through the end of Shemot, and then Shemot picks up in Bamidbar, and Vayikra is a standalone book of laws. You know, if you were asking me, you know, so then put, if you want to have laws separate from narrative, so put Bereshit, Shemot, Bamidbar, Dvarim, and put Vayikra at the end, right? Have a, you know, as a parenthetical book, as an addendum, as a legal code that's added on. So why does it come here? Right? What is its goal? What is the theme of the book as a whole? So we already began to discuss at the end of Shemot, but the what it seems to be is, as we noted last week, right? Shemot, the second half of Shemot at least, focused on how people create a relationship with God, specifically how the Jewish people, as a nation, create a relationship with God, both through revelation and through the Mishkan, right? Creating a home for God in this world. Vayikra picks up with the theme of the Mishkan, which is that the expression of the relationship is something called Kedusha, right? Is holiness. And to describe what that looks like, what that means, how you actually deal with God being in your midst, you have Sefer Vayikra, which is the laws that relate to the Mishkan. So, Liebtag continues, he summarizes. He said, Sefer Bereshit, we saw how God entered into a covenant with Avram Avinu in order that his offspring, and his Zera, would become a nation dedicated to the representation of his name. To facilitate that goal, God entered into a covenant with the Avot, promising both a special land, meaning an Aretz, and a long historical process to become the nation, meaning through the Brit Ben Avotirim, etc. Right. So the Bereshit is about how Avram gets chosen. Right. We don't choose. Right. Adam. We wanted the world to be all chosen. Adam. That didn't work. We wanted it to be chosen. Time of Noah. That didn't work. So eventually, Avram is chosen and his family. Sefer Shemot began as God began his fulfillment of that covenant by redeeming Bnei Israel from Egypt and giving them the Torah at Sinai, the laws that would help establish this special nation. The unfortunate events at Chet HaEgel constituted a breach, raising the question of this special relationship, if this special relationship would continue. Fortunately, God declared his attributes of mercy, thus enabling Bnei Israel an avenue for repentance, as reflected in their collective effort to construct, that should just be the Mishkan. The return of God's Shekhinah to the Mishkan at the conclusion of Sefer Shemot served as a climax, for it showed that this covenantal relationship had returned to its original level. It is precisely at this point, when God's Shekhinah returns, where Sefer Vayikra begins. Before Bnei Yisrael continue their journey towards Eretz Canaan, as will be discussed in Sefer Bamidbar, God commands them with an additional set of mitzvot that will not only provide a guide for how they can use the Mishkan, but will also facilitate their becoming God's special nation, a Mamlechet Kohanim v'Goy Kadosh. In this sense, Sefer Vayikra constitutes more than simply a technical list of the various rituals performed in the Mishkan. As we will show, the laws of Sefer Vayikra will focus on the very nature of Am Yisrael's relationship with God at both the individual and the national level. So, I've just put, Leibdeck's introduction, but I've basically given away the end, right? But now I really want to prove that thesis. Because when most people think of Sefer Vayikra, they think of, if you would ask people why it comes in the heels of Shemot and they thought about it, they would say at first glance that Shemot ends with the building of the Mishkan, and Vayikra is the laws of the Mishkan. And that's true for about 60-70% of Vayikra, but it's not actually true for all of Vayikra. Right? If you look at Vayikra, so if we even just like skim through the whole Sefer, right? Parshat Vayikra is about Karbanot. So Vayikra fits the bill. Right? That's Vayikra, right? Tzav also, right? Tzav is about other karbanot, but about minchot, about the invalidations of it. Shmini is about the actual inauguration of the Mishkan and the death of Nadab and Avihu, and the prohibition against drinking in the when you're doing the avod in the Beis HaMikdash. But then you have things that don't seem to fit the bill. So, for example, the end of Shmini, Perek Yud Aleph of Vayikra, right? Leibdeck would always, at the beginning of a book, make us do this. Just take a, Koran Tanakh and map out the entire book from beginning to end, right? So the first 10 prakim of Vayikra fit that bill. But then, Perek Yud Aleph is the laws of Kashrus, right? Are thrown in Perek Yud Aleph of Vayikra. And then, Tazria. So we have Tazria is back to sort of Mishkan-related laws, right? It's all the things that make you impure that forbid you from going into the Mishkan and require Karbanot to come back to the Mishkan. So that sort of fits the bill, sort of. Mitzora is the same as Mitzora. Achremot is the service of on Yom Kippur. But then Perek Yud Chet in Vayikra, which is what we read on Yom Kippur at Mincha, is the forbidden relationships, right? Is all the ancestral relationships. And Perek Yud Tet is Kedoshim Tiyu. Then it comes back to honoring parents and not worshiping idols and giving tzedakah and have honest dealings and Vahavtal Re'echa Kamocha and Kilayim. And then Perek Chaf is back to the illicit relationships. And then in Emor, we return to the Yomim Tovim, but this from the vantage point of the Karbanot you bring on the Yomim Tovim. So that makes sense that this is an Emor. Right? And then Bahar is Shemitah. So, like I said, 60-70% of the book is about working in the Mishkan. But there are significant portions of the book that are not about working in the Mishkan, right? Such as, again, Kashrus, the illicit relationships, Kedoshim Tiyu, right, and all the ethical laws that are put in Kedoshim Tiyu, and Shemitah, right, the laws of the land. And then Mechukosai is the, right, you have the Tochacha at the end. But the question becomes, right, if what we normally think, the Vayikra is is the book of the laws of the Mishkan, then the Sefer doesn't really make sense, right? It seems to be a lot of laws of Mishkan with other things thrown in. But if you take what Rai Leibdeck sort of swallowed here at the end, which is that no, right? Chazal referred to Vayikra as Torat Kohanim, which we generally think of as the Torah of the Kohanim, meaning the people who the laws for the Kohanim who work in the Mishkan, who work in the Beit HaMikdash. But it's not actually what the book seems to be about. Rav David Zvi Hoffman puts it this way. It's Torat Kohanim in two senses. Kohanim, meaning the priests, the people who work in the Mishkan, the Beit HaMikdash, and the laws that relate to them, and the Torah of the Jewish people who were referred to as Mamlechet Kohanim v'Goy Kadosh. The goal of Vayikra isn't to tell you how to worship in the Mishkan. It's to give you the laws that allow you to achieve holiness. That means primarily telling you the laws of the Mishkan, because that's sort of the seat of Kedusha. That's the concentrated Kedusha. That's where you bring Karbanot. That's where you have to be pure. But part of being a holy nation is more expansive than that. It's, right, as the Rambam's, right, the Rambam in his when he categorizes the 14 books, so the book called Kiddusha has two sets of laws in it, basically. The Isurei Achila and the Isurei Bia, right, the prohibited foods and the prohibited sexual relationships. Because Kiddusha, when it comes to individuals, not the Beit HaMikdash, is about being able to limit the way that you engage in physical pleasure. So that also gets into be Vayikra. It's the Vayikra is the instructions. It's the guide to how the Jewish people will actually fulfill the mandate of Shmot, which is become a Mamlechet Kohanim Megoy Kadosh. Right? Because if you are Kohanim, you deserve the relationship that is manifest in the Mishkan with the Kohanim. And that dual understanding of Kedusha, of Kehuna, is really what lies at the heart of Sefer Vayikra from beginning to end. And that's why, again, we have 60-70% dealing with the Mishkan, but all these critical laws about how regular human beings can be holy, whether it be the Yisur Achila or the Yisur Ebiya, or it be Kedoshim Tiyu, it be the ethical laws that are in Kedoshim Tiyu, Vahaftal Reicha Kamocha, and the like. That's all part of the story of how you become holy. Now, which of these is primary? Right, which of these is primary? Right? Even if we accept this thesis, that Sefer Vayikra is the book of Kedusha, is the book of how you become Kohanim at two levels, right? How the Kohanim serve in the Mikdash, and how the Jewish people become a Mamlechet Kohanim, the Goy Kadosh become Kohanim in the sense that we are Kohanim. So which is really primary in Vayikra? Which is primary in Torah? So here, right, again, I think if you ask most people, even after you prove to them that there are other parts to Vayikra that are not about Karbanot, they would still tell you that the primary notion of Torah Kohanim is Torah Kohanim, part one, is the
Mishkan.
Right, the Mishkan. Type two is everything else, mm-hmm. Right? The problem is it doesn't actually bear out. So without looking right now at the first pasuk in Vayikra, or the first two pasukim really in Vayikra, right? Who should Sefer Vayikra be directed at? Vayidaber Moshe el blank.
Whatever it says.
Right, what should it say?
Aaron.
Right, Aaron, the Kohanim, something like that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, if you skip for a moment to Parshat Tzav, right, to next week's Parsha, the next Parsha, that's in fact how it starts. Vaydaber Hashem al Moshe lemor, tzav et Aharon vet banav lemor, zot Torah ta'olah. Right? Command Aaron and his children, telling him that blah, 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 blah. Which is exactly how you would expect Sefer Vayikra to start. Except it's not how Sefer Vayikra starts. Sefer Vayikra starts, Vaykra el Moshe, Vaydaber Hashem elav me'ol moed lemor, daber el bnei Yisrael v'amarta alehem. Speak to the Jews, not to Aaron. Right? You don't speak to Aaron until Perek Vav of Sefer Vayikra. You speak to the Jews first. Now, we forget that. It's very hard to see that, because if you now look at the first five Prakim of Vayikra, what is actually discussed? Korbanot. Right? Despite what I just said, that it's Taberah ben Yisrael v'amarta lehem Adam ki akriv mikem korban la'ashem v'nebeimah v'nebakar v'natzom ta'akriv et korbanchem. Sefer Parshat Vayikra is about Karbanot. It starts with the Ola, right? Starting with the Ola of animals, and then going to the Ola of birds, and going to the Mincha, and then going all different types of Mincha, right? All the flower offerings, and then in Perek Gimel, it's the Shlamim, right? Ola being the Karbanot that are offered totally on the Mizbeach, that are burnt completely. Shlamim being the Karbanot that some of them are eaten and some of them are burnt. Perek Dalid is the Chatas, right? Is the sin offering. And all the special cases of sin offerings. There's the sin offering of an individual. There's the sin offering of the Kohen. There's the sin offering when the whole nation sins. There's the sin offering of the king. And then Perek Hay is the karbanot you bring when the Beit HaMikdash gets contaminated, or when you take a false oath, meaning what we call Karban Asham, all the different types of Karban Asham, Asham Vada, and Asham Talui, right? There's five cases when you bring a Karban Asham for doing a sin, and then one, when you're not sure if you did a sin, you bring what's called an Asham Talui, and that's the first five Prakim of Vayikra. So, on the one hand, Vayikra opens with the Jewish people. On the other hand, it just talks about Karbanot the whole time. And then, if this weren't strange enough, Tzav opens the way we expect Sefer Vayikra to open, which is Tzav et Aharon v'Banav Lemor. And then, guess what it does? It repeats the Karbanot again, right? You know, with the art scroll, this is very helpful because you can just look at it on the side, right? So it talks about cleaning out. The first thing it does, which is a little bit bizarre, though it's important, talks about cleaning the Mizbeach from the old ash, which is not the thing, by the way, I would have put first, right? If I'm talking about Karban, I would put that last. But okay. Then it's the Mincha. Then it's the Chatas, right? Then it's the Halach of Kashering. Then it's the Asham. Then it's the random gifts that go to the Kohanim. Then it's the Toda, which is a type of Shlamim. Then it's the prohibitions of eating while you're contaminated, the Isurim of the fat and blood. And then it Perichet is already when we actually sanctify the Kohanim. So you open up the Sefer, and first of all, why does the Sefer start with the Jews? So on the one hand, you might say, okay, because that tells you that the primary Kedusha is the type in the latter half of the book. But that's not true, because it talks about Karbanot for five Prakim. Right, it's clearly talking Karbanot, but not directed at the Kohanim. Then, if that wasn't bad enough, it repeats the Karbanot again in Parashat Tzav, as if we didn't just spend five Prakim, we then go through it all again. And if that wasn't bad enough, we do repeat it, but we do not repeat it in the same order as it was in Vayikra. We decide that we're going to go through five Prakim, list all the Karbanot, and then do it again, but just for fun, we're going to do it in a different order. Right? So if you look at this chart, this will summarize what just happened. Right? Because it's basically eight Prakim. Yeah, six Prakim. Six, seven Prakim. Right? The left is Vayikra, and the right is Tzav. So, Vayikra goes like this. Right? The Karban Nedava, well, okay, I'll leave that for a second, right? It's the Ola, right? Leave the headings for science. The Ola, which is, right, so here we're at 1A1, right? So it's Ola, where the entire Karban is burnt on the Mizbeach. The first nine psukim talk about cattle, the next four psukim talk about sheep, and then the next four psukim talk about birds. Then we move to fully burnt minchot, so all the flour offerings, and we start with Solet, which is plain flour mixed with oil, and Lavona. Then we go to Mafet Tanur, which is ones that are baked in the oven. Then we have a Machavat, which is the ones that are fried on a griddle. And then we have Marcheshet, which are ones which are baked in a pan. And then we have the Bikurim, which is the Mincha you bring from the first harvest. And then we have the Shlamim, which is a peace offering. So we have cattle, sheep, and goats. And then we move from that to the Chatat, right? This is 2A. And we start with for general sins, right? And it's organized according to who violated. So you have the Par Kohen Mashiach, right? If the Kohen Gadol sins, so he has to bring a Karban. The Par Helam Davar of Bezdin, if the court sins, and therefore the whole nation sins with them, they have to bring a Karban. The Sir Nasi, which is the king, and then a normal person. And then you have some of the unique cases, the Olav Yored, right? The rich person's Karban, the poor person, the very poor person's Karban. And then you have the Asham, right? And then you have the Asham Elod and the Asham Talui, right? All the cases.
Sorry, what's Asham again?
So Asham has two meanings. It's either the Karbanot you bring for specific crimes against the Mishkan, like taking things from the Mishkan. It's just called a Karban Asham, right? And sometimes an Asham is a Karban you bring when you're not sure if you sinned, right? That's the difference between what's called an Asham Vadai, right? An Asham which is brought, an Asham which is a guilt offering, but it's either for five specific sins or for any sin that you don't know whether you committed it or not, right? The Taloi one, and then one for stealing from others, right? So the order is Ola Mincha Shlamim Chatat Asham. If you look on the right, the order of Tzav is, right, again, leave the headings for a second. It's Ola, Mincha, where the order is the same, right? But it's Ola starting with the laws of the Ola, followed by the Mincha, right? And then the details of the Mincha, and then we go to Shlamim, right? And then it talks about the fats and the Chazan Shok, right? But the order now, right, if we followed it, it starts with the Minchot, right, which it didn't last time. It starts with Ola, then it goes to Mincha, but then it goes to Chatat. Not the whole list is here, actually. This is a bad part of the chart. I think the wrong part of the chart I wanted to put. Right? It then goes from Mincha to Chatat, right? Right? So now it's moving what was at the end up till here from before Shlamim, right? And then Asham, and then the Toda is after that, right? So it's Ola, which is the same, but then it's Chatat, Asham, and then Shlamim, right? So it repeated it, but it repeated in the opposite order. Okay. Or not opposite. And just a mixed up one. It's not like opposite. It's not like it's mirrored. It's just sort of, right? Ola stays in the same place, but then Chatas and Asham move to the beginning, and Shlamim moves to the end,
the
right?
The Toda wasn't there, right?
What? Well, so the Toda is a type of Shlamim, okay. Right? So the Toda gets put in, but it's, right, it's a type of Shlamim. Okay. So the question really becomes, okay, well, what exactly is going on here? So here, we come back to our opening insight, which is that Parshat Vayikra is directed at the Jewish people as a whole. Parshat Tzav is directed at the Kohanim. That's important because we tend to think that the Karbanot, who's really responsible for it? The Kohanim. But that's only sort of true. What are the Kohanim responsible for with Karbanot?
Well, making sure that all these other things happen in terms of guilt offerings and everything.
Right. I mean, they're responsible with actually bringing them, like dealing with the process of dealing with them. So if I had to figure out how I would organize the instructions I would give to the Kohanim. So if you were giving the instructions to the Kohanim, how would you organize the Karbanot? Practically. Right? Practically. Right? If you're giving, when you talk to the Kohanim, you give them a practical instructions. Now, what is the most practical way of talking to them? Well, they need to know how holy things are, because the holier things are, the holier the Karbanot are, the more restrictions there are on them. So I would order them, starting with Kodshe Kodshim, with the holiest, moving to the Kodshim Kalim, which are more lenient, which are things which are less straight, which is in fact what Tzav does. What else would you do? If you're talking to the Kohanim, I would give them a laundry list of what they have to do with the Karbanot. And guess what? That's in fact what you have in Tzav. So if we go back to Tzav, right? Tzav starts out. Tzav et Aaron ve'banav le'mor. Zo Torah ha'Ola. Hi Ola mokdam mizbeach kol ha'layla ad ha'boker ve'esho mizbeach echtuk ad-bo. This is the laws of the Ola. Now the Ola is first of all the holiest of Karbanot. It's the one that's totally burnt. But then what's the first law they give? This is the law of the Ola. If it stays in the mizbeach all night, and the fire is burning all night, so then, Pasuk Gimel, V'lavasha kohen midovada mechnezei vad yelbasha b'saro. So the Kohen should put on his clothes, ve'irim et ha'deshen, and clear out the old stuff, asher tochal ha'eshet ha'olah, which is left over from last night, al mizbeach, v'samol etzal mizbeach, and cleared off and put on the side of the mizbeach. Why does that come first? Because if you're giving a practical instruction to Kohanim, you have to get into the nitty-gritty. First thing you do when you wake up in the morning is clear off what was there from the night before and start the new day. Then you bring the Ola. And then, once you've cleaned yourself off, so that, ufashad v'gadav, take off the old clothes, v'lavash v'gadav mecharim, put on new clothes, v'otsiyan ha'deshen, v'michotz l'machaneh ha'makom dor, and take out the ashes outside the camp. V'eish ha'mazbech tukad bo, lo yitichban, the fire, make sure it stays on, uvi'er ala kohen eitzim b'boker, and each morning put on wood, v'rachal le'ola, v'ktir ala chel v'ashlamim, eish tamid tukal mazbech lo tichban, there'll be a fire there at all times. And then you would continue with the holiest Karbanot. And as you're going along, you would tell them the instructions. So, Zot Torah HaMincha. This is the Mincha. Hakrevo Ta B'nei Aaron L'fnei Hashem El P'nei Mizbeach. And then that's what you get in Pasuk Chet. How do you do it? Well, V'herim Mimenu B'kumso Mitzolat HaMincha U'misham Navet Kol Levona. Right, so when you bring the Mincha, so you burn most of it, but first you You don't burn most of it. You take a kmitza. Kmitza is these three fingers. You stick it in, and you put it like this, right? And that's called kmitza, which is a mixture of everything, and that you put on the mizbeach, right? And then pasuk den banotarim b'nei yochlu aron uvanav, and the rest of it you eat, right? So you give them the nitty-gritties. You say, when you go, so you do kmitza, but just practical point, it's important to know just to visualize it. Kmitza, right? People don't understand it because they never really made a kmitza, obviously. Roy Liebtek once did it, though, just to the proper amounts. If you actually just put the right amount of oil and flour together, right? So people think that what you get is dough. Right? You don't get dough. There's not enough oil to make it dough. It's very little oil. What it does is it makes the flour go from powder snow to packing snow. Right? That's basically the consistency you get. So when you're thinking of kmitza, think you're dealing with packing snow, and then you take three fingers worth, and it just sits in your fingers like you would a small snowball, right? So that's kmitza. You take that, and then you throw that on the mizbeach, and then you eat the rest of it, right? And then we continue with all different types of, right, all different laws of mincha. If a kohen brings a mincha, so then you have to burn the whole thing, right? You bring specifics, and then you bring the, right, the chatat. Then you talk about the chatat, because the chatat is also a kadshei kadshim. It is a karbon which is has the highest level of kedusha. The owners don't eat it, but the kohanim do. So we started with ola, which is totally burnt, then mincha, where only the kohanim eat it, and the mincha of the kohen, which nobody eats, and then the sin offering, which a little bit is eaten by the kohen, but nothing is eaten by the owners. Right, because these are all kadshei kadshim. And then in Pasuk Chav, the Torah tells you, and what happens if the karban happens to touch something? So that thing now has to be kashered. Right? And then we talk about the asham, which again, some of it is eaten by the kohen, but none of it is eaten by the kohanim. And then in Perek Zayin, Pasuk Yud Aleph, we come back to the shlamim, specifically the toda type of shlamim, right, where it's called kachei kalim, right, because not only is it's not totally burnt, and it's not that it's eaten only by the kohanim, it's eaten even by the owners, right? So if I was writing an instruction manual for the kohanim, it makes sense. I start with the holiest, which is totally burnt, and I give you all the details, right? Meaning, I start with cleaning, and then I say you bring the karban, and then when you bring the karban, these are the karban that are totally burnt, and these are the ones that the kohanim eat a little bit, and these are the ones that everybody's allowed to eat. And then in Pasuk Tetzayin, we tell you that if you have the wrong intention while you're bringing the karban, so it's bad, you have to throw it out. And you can't eat it when you're tamei. And that you can't eat the fat and the bloods. And when you're bringing the karban, this is the order in which you bring it, right? And that's Perek, Zayin, Pasuk, Chavchet, and on, right? Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Leimor, Dabel Ben Israel Leimor, Amakrev et Zevach Shlomav, LaHashem, Yavi et Karbano, LaHashem, Yizel Zevach Shlomav. Yadav Tiviyena et Yishay Hashem, and Achele et Achazel, Yiviyena et Achazel, Lanif, Tinufa Lefnei Hashem. Right, we give the whole order. You bring this limb first, and then that limb, etc.
So
right?
it's like moment by moment.
Yeah, it's a right. This is a detailed screenplay.
We don't have
that
detail in Vayikra.
What?
We don't have that detail.
No, we don't have it in Vayikra. In Tzav, we're writing the instruction manual. So we turn to the kohanim and say, here, this is what you do. And how do you order it? You order it by kedusha. It makes sense. By the highest holy to the lowest one. But that only begs the question, okay, why? Then what is Vayikra? Right? Tzav is what everyone thinks Vayikra is. But Vayikra isn't Tzav. Right? Vayikra is something totally different. And here is where you realize Vayikra is not organized, like Parshat Vayikra, not Sefer Vayikra. Parshat Vayikra is not organized by holiness of the karban. It is organized. If I asked you, right, if you were writing the laws of karbanot for human, for non-kohanim, right, how would you organize it?
Well, if it's directed at the people, then it's like, what are the people responsible for doing? So how do they bring the korbanot? What's their role?
Right. Or, as we'll see, that it does that. It doesn't do what as much as, right, why? I mean, why would you bring a korban? What is your motivation for a korban? You would organize it by motivations. And that is the organization of Vayikra. And that is, now if you look at the titles of each of this, why is Vayikra organized the way it is? Because it starts with the karbanot nidava, the voluntary offerings, and then the Korbanot Chova, and then the obligatory ones. So it gets all the voluntary ones out of the way, Ola Mincha Shlamim, and then brings all the obligatory ones, Chatat, Asham, and all the different types. But that makes something interesting.
Like, why that order?
Why that order? And then you realize, wait a second. Vayikra is the Sefer which is teaching us about Kedusha. And we think it's about the Mishkan. And it's partially about the Mishkan. And since it's about the Mishkan, we think it's about Kohanim. And the Torah does something that throws everything out of order, which is, it highlights that, yes, Kedusha is about the Mishkan, but that's Parshat Tzav. But just to emphasize that that's not the whole story, A, Vayikra has things which have nothing to do with the Mishkan. But B, even when we talk about the Mishkan, we save the Kohanim's role till Tzav. We start with the Jewish people. And we organize it based on motivation. And what do? Ironically, we don't organize it the way you would think we would organize Vayikra. Right? When you're ordering a law book, right, you start with obligations, and then you move to options.
Right.
The fact that the Torah goes out of its way to start Vayikra, the law of the book of the laws of the Mishkan, with A, speaking to the Jewish people and not the Kohanim, B, organizing it by motivation, but starting with Nidava, starting with options, with voluntary, and not with obligation, seems to tell you something quite fundamental, right? Which is that maybe, we misunderstood the whole book, right? The book is really about
choice.
Yeah, is about the Jews choosing to initiate a relationship with God. One way we do that is through the Mishkan. Another way we do that is through keeping kashrus. And another way we do that is through Kedushim Tiyu. Sefer Vayikra is how do we achieve Kedusha. Kedusha is how we create a relationship with God. And the way we do that is by wanting to initiate a relationship. There's also law. But Vayikra, ironically, doesn't start with the Kohanim, and it doesn't start with the Bnei Yisrael's obligations. It starts with what would happen if a Jewish person decided he wanted to bring a karban, which was an ola, which was totally burnt, for no reason other than he wanted to give it to God, and he wanted nothing in return. What would that look like? That's how Vayikra opens. It chooses to pick the karban that the average Jew brings for no reason other than he wants to come close to God, that he's not getting anything out of it, and that's how Vayikra starts.
Is that what the ola is, really?
Yeah, right? The ola is a voluntary karban. Most of them are voluntary, not all of them. Most of them are voluntary, mm-hmm. Right? Which you bring just to create a relationship with God, right? A karban that you bring. So if you skip down to the back here, to right, leave tag number 3. One could suggest that Parshat Vayikra begins specifically with the karban nidava, since these karbanot in particular reflect the individual's aspiration to improve his relationship with God. Only afterward does the Torah detail the karban chova, which amends that relationship should it be tainted by sin. Right? Because all of the obligatory, most of the obligatory karbanot are not, some of them are obligatory like we'll find in Emor, which is you have to bring a karban on Yom Tov. But usually, on an average day, the karban that an individual has to bring because he has to is because he made a mistake, and an ola is because he wants to. So, if Vayikra is about how does an individual maintain Kedusha or achieve Kedusha and build a relationship with God, you start with what would a pristine relationship look like? And then you say, and what happens if he falters, he makes a mistake? Well, guess what? Karbanot provide the opportunity to fix that relationship and re-achieve Kedusha. But we organize it to emphasize the centrality of the individual building a relationship with God. And then he says something more. He says, we may, however, suggest an even more fundamental reason based on the double theme that we discussed in our study of the second half of Sefer Shmot. He said, in that sense, Vayikra is just picking up on Shmot, which is, recall from our previous shiurim, the Mishkan served a dual purpose. A, to perpetuate the experience of Har Sinai, and B, to atone for the Cheta Egel. This was Rashi versus Ramban. But he said, now look, right? Now, you can turn the chart this way. He put it along the side. Right? Now look at it from this perspective. Right? The word that keeps coming up in the first half of Vayikra, in the voluntary part, is Ishei Reach Nichoach LaHashem, which is the words that were used, if you go back into to Parshat Yitro, when the Jews brought the Karbanot after HaSinai, before the relationship had been tainted. You brought Karbanot, Ishei Reach Nichoach LaHashem. The words that come up in the second half, in the when you bring the chatat, is v'chiper alav ha-kohen. The kohen will, right, get you atonement, v'nislacho, and you'll be forgiven. That's language from Moshe's dialogue with the Chet Ha'egel. So Eliftek says, you know, it's more than that. It's Vayikra. Bamidbar had two themes. Sorry, Shmot had two themes at the end. What does a pristine relationship with God look like? And how do you fix that relationship when it's been broken by sin? Vayikra shows you how that manifests itself in law, which is karbanot are an opportunity for the individual to forge a relationship in God's house in two ways. There's the ola, which represents the type of relationship that we had in Yitro, where everything was good, everything was pure, motivations were fine, they'd been untainted. The chatat represents what happens when you need to fix a broken relationship. So Vayikra, while it seems at first glance to just be a series of laws about the Mishkan, the way it's organized is actually a legal commentary on the narrative of Shmot. Right? It's Kedusha is more about people than Kohanim. It's also about Kohanim, but they come second, not first. And what does it mean to have a relationship with God? You would think it's first about obligation and then about option. No, it's the other way around. It's first about altruistic, pure relationships, and then the obligations of Karbanot are not obligations. They're obligations that are imposed to allow you to fix problems and re-achieve that original pure relationship. Or it's, this is what Yitro looks like in Karban form. This is what Kitisa looks like in Karban form. Vayikra is a legal commentary on Sefer Shmot. If you look now at 2, I put from Yoni Grossman, where he builds on this, and he says, it would appear that the reason is connected with the purpose of each of the two listings, right? So again, coming to Vayikra and Sav, or to be more precise, to the different people to whom they're addressed. The listing in Parshat Vayikra opens, speak to the children of Israel and say to them, if a man among you bring an offering to God, right, etc. So this is what we've already noted, that the first Vayikra is about the Kohen, is about the Jewish people, the second is about the Kohanim. Skip to the next paragraph. In this light, the reasoning for the differing structure of the two parshiot is clear. In our parsha, where the Israelite is the focus, the categories are clearly voluntary and obligatory sacrifices. From the point of view of the person bringing the sacrifice, these are two completely different experiences. And his whole visit to God's house changes in light of the reason for his bringing the sacrifice. This difference, though, is almost completely irrelevant to the Kohen who serves in the Beit HaMikdash. This sacrificial ritual is not directly influenced by the reason for the sacrifice being brought. Whether the sacrifice is a voluntary ola or an obligatory one, the Kohen's work still involves stripping the animal's skin, cutting into parts, burning parts of it, etc. From the point of the view of the Kohen, Kohen on duty, a more important question is who eats the sacrifice. In other words, it is important to him, both practically and experientially, whether the sacrifice in question is an ola of which he cannot partake at all, or one in which he has a portion, or a peace offering which, as his name indicates, brings and symbolizes peace and all those involved eat its meat. Since the listing in Parshat Tzav focuses on the Kohanim, we can also understand why the Torah suddenly remembers and adds to the list of mincha offerings that special mincha offered by the newly sanctified Kohen. It is logical that this sacrifice not appear at the beginning of the Sefer in Parshat Vayikra, where the focus is the Israelite, but rather in the listing in Parshat Tzav, which is addressed to the Kohanim and focuses on them. But let us now return to our opening observations. Sefer Vayikra is indeed the Torah Kohanim. It deals with the laws pertaining to the sacrifices and to the Beit HaMikdash, and this subject is connected both practically and in its very essence specifically with the Kohanim. And yet, it is for this very reason that the Sefer opens with a focus on the Israelite who comes to the Beit HaMikdash. In many cultures of the ancient world, the priests were an elite among the nations, and their actions in the temples were hidden from the masses, such that their service of the gods became quite esoteric in the minds of the people. The philosophy underlying this was that not every mortal is capable of serving God. The servants of God were a special class of priests, and the simple individual from amongst the nation could only regard their spiritual world with admiration. Sefer Vayikra deals with issues pertaining to the Kohanim. And the danger exists that in the mind of both the Israelite masses and the Kohanim performing the divine service, the institution of the Kahuna will become esoteric, removed from the masses seeking communication with God, and a spiritual experience will bring them closer to Him. Right? Therefore, the Torah... Right, I cut this out in the middle, but now it's obvious. Therefore, the Torah goes out of its way and opens with the Jews, the individuals, to tell you, no, 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 you're missing the point. Vayikra is about the Mishkan, but the Mishkan isn't about the Kohanim. They're just the people who work there. It's about you. It's about your motivation. It's about your ability and responsibility to bring Karbanot, to forge a relationship, to follow the laws that allow you to become close to God through the Mishkan. The Mishkan is about you. It's about the whole people. So it starts with them. It starts with an organization that makes sense to them. It then talks to the Kohanim. It emphasizes that. And that opens the door for the end of the Sefer, which is what he says here, that the Sefer concludes in the same vein. The second half of Sefer Vayikra emphasizes the fact that holiness resides in Israel beyond the confines of the Mikdash. Holiness of time, right? The festivals, holiness of place, right, Bahar B'chukosai, dealing with the laws of Shemitah and Yovel, go beyond the confines of the Mikdash and address each and every Jew. So what you get is, if we just summarize what Vayikra is about, is everyone thinks Vayikra is this long, tedious book of laws directed at the Kohanim, directed at the priests' work in the Beit HaMikdash, and what does it have to do with the average Jew? And okay, here and there, there are laws that relate to the average person. But when you actually follow the organizational structure of Vayikra, you realize that's not it at all. Sefer Vayikra starts with Bnei Israel, tells you that, A, yes, God's presence is manifest in a unique way in the Mishkan. So yes, if we want to pick up on Sefer Shemot and we want to talk about building a relationship with God, we got to talk about the Mishkan. We've got to talk about that place which God has chosen to reside in this world. That makes sense. But don't think that because the Mishkan is holy and the Kohanim are working there, that the main goal of the Mishkan is so that the Kohanim can bring some Karbanot because God needs Karbanot. He doesn't need Karbanot. He gave us the Mishkan, v'shachanti bitocham, so that he'll dwell among all the Jewish people. So even within the confines of the Mishkan, we start with the Jewish people to tell them it's about you. And then we throw another curveball, right? You think the Mishkan is about obligation? No, it's about opportunity. So we start the Sefer with the individual, with Ola. The carbon you bring, which is optional, which goes straight to God, you have no portion, you just want to give a gift to God.
Is it significant that the Kohanim don't eat that offering?
Yeah, right? Because it's not about them, it's about the person bringing it and God. There's no intermediaries, there's no nothing. Right. Right? The pristine carbon is the Ola. The person just wants to create a relationship with God. The Kohanim do nothing more than bring it for him. Right, but they don't eat it. They're not intermediate. Right, they're just they work. And that, as Rabbi Liebdag, now adding this to Yoni Grossman's, right, says this is the legal commentary on right Matan Torah. Right, God told us, I have a relationship with you, and as the Ramban said, I want to continue the Har Sinai in the Mishkan. Right, the Mishkan will allow you to constantly have revelation, and that pristine relationship. You know how it looks? It looks like an Ola. It looks when the individual Jew brings a carbon for no other reason than he wants to come close to God. That's how I'm going to allow you to relive, say, Parshas Yisro, the revelation, that pure relationship with God. Then we get to Chatat, where Hashem says, you know what, but I understand. In history, like in the Egel, you make mistakes. But as we learned in Shemot, the brilliance of Moshe is that he manages to argue for the Jewish people still having a new relationship with God. And God says, yeah, you know what? I'll give you a way of fixing your sin. I'll give you the Yugdim Omidot HaRachamim. And Vayikra opens with, you know what? You're not always going to have a Moshe there for you. But guess what? You have something. Right? God's presence is the Mishkan. And when you make a mistake, your own personal Egel, well, guess what? I have something for you. I have a Karban Chatat. You have a way of fixing that relationship. Right? It's a legal commentary on Kitisa. This is what it looks like to rebuild a relationship. And then, yes, the Kohanim work in the Beit HaMikdash. And yes, there's protocols in the Beit HaMikdash. But that comes second. The goal of the Mishkan is to teach you that God is among you. And that point comes clear. Because at the end, the rest of the Sefer, if you look what's included in the Sefer, which is not just Mishkan related, it is Kedusha related. Because the point of the Sefer, again, coming to Rav David Tzvi Hoffman's point, is not just to train the Kohanim. It's to train the Mamlechet Kohanim, the Goy Kadosh. It's the Bnei Israel who the Sefer opened with. And therefore, the first half of the Sefer tells them that you even have a place in the Mishkan. The second half of the Sefer tells them, and by the way, the fact that you are the Kohanim of the world tells you that you have Kedusha outside the Mishkan. That's what we call Kashrus. That's what we call the Isurei, right, the illicit relationships. That's what we call Kedushim Tiyu. That's what we call the Haftarei HaKamocha in Perek Yutet. That's what we call Kibud Avaim in Perek Yutet. That's what we call Shemitah in Parshat Bahar. That's what we call the Yamim Tovim in Emor. That's what we call Shabbos in Emor. There's the Kedusha of the Mishkan, but the Mishkan is supposed to overflow and permeate and express itself. Right? The notion of Kedusha is a goal that we have, that we strive for, outside the confines of the Mishkan. So Vayikra is Torat Kohanim. It's the instruction guide of, A, how do we express and concretize our relationship with God in the Mishkan, and B, outside the confines of the Mishkan, how do we become Mamlechet Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh? Right? And that takes you from the beginning of Vayikra to the end, and it ends with, right, which makes sense with, Sefer Vayikra will end, when we get to it eventually, with the Tochecha, right, with hardcore Musar, right, which is, what happens if you make a mistake, right, if you don't do what you're supposed to, right, and there's a reason, because Vayikra, right, if you think about it, why should the Tochecha be in Vayikra? The book, which everyone thinks is only about the Kohanim, why is it in Vayikra? And the answer is, no, it's not. Vayikra is the instruction book of how the Jewish people become the nation of God. And that's why it has to end with fire and brimstone of, don't mess this up, right? It's specifically Vayikra that makes sense, where it has to be, because it has to guide the Jewish people. So, with that in mind, we'll try in the next few weeks. I don't know how many weeks we'll spend on Vayikra, because there is a lot of nitty-gritty, right? But try to pick out some of these themes that we go through Sefer Vayikra and see to what extent it really is, right, the guidebook to becoming an Am Kadosh, to becoming a holy nation. And I'll just add one last point on this notion of the Torah, of the Mamlechet Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh. Ray Angel said this, I liked it when he came a few weeks ago to the Bayit. I think I mentioned this, right, that really the key to understanding much of the Torah, and definitely Sefer Bereishit, is to understand the following analogy, which is, Kohen is to, well, I'll start it the other way. Jew is to the world what Kohen is to Jew. Mm-hmm. Right? That the fundamental thesis that you need to understand in Torah is, right, Kohanim aren't, right, we aren't chosen to the exclusion of the world. Right? Kohanim are chosen to be role models, to, right, sort of carry out certain tasks that express God's presence in the Mishkan. For the Jewish people. The Jewish people are chosen to live a particular type of life to model it for the rest of the world. But just like, as we saw, the Jews aren't disconnected from the Kohanim, they're actually the main point, right? The world isn't disconnected from the Jews. Sefer Vayikra is training us to be Kohanim, not to be separate from them, but just like the Kohanim are there to help us reach God, the goal of teaching us to be a Mamlechet Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh is the same, is to train us to be the type of model nation that will then overflow and our influence will spread to everybody else. And that, right, analogy and the dual meaning of Torah Kohanim is what Vayikra really comes to teach. So we'll try to explore it in the next few weeks.